Pull up a chair and buckle up. It's the Original Strength Podcast. Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's edition of the Original Strength Podcast. Got a super, super duper special show for you this week. I have Dan Millman on the show. And if you don't know who Dan Millman is, he wrote a book at one time called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And then they made a movie out of the book called The Peaceful Warrior starring Nick Nolte. And it's the book is amazing. The movie is great. But Dan is also, well, he's an amazing man, and he is a phenomenal teacher. Guys, you're going to enjoy this. Grab a notepad and a pen, take some notes. This is the Original Strength Podcast. Dan, I first found out about you through The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. I love the book, and then I watched the movie Peaceful Warrior, but then I got sucked into everything else you're doing. So I've got all kinds of questions, but I guess I just want to start with, what is a peaceful warrior?
That's a very good question to start with, since some of your viewers, listeners may not be familiar with my work. The term came into my life organically. I had trained in the martial arts since I was 10 years old, various arts. I won't go into them all now unless you ask me later, and self-defense in general. And I was teaching a class when I was a professor at Oberlin College, and it involved Aikido and Tai Chi, both more or less internal arts. And I was going to call the course Way of the Warrior, but that didn't quite fit, Tim. So I ended up adding Peaceful Warrior. It added a sort of balance, more about internal arts. And what the term, how it applies to all of us, I view every human being as a peaceful warrior in training. Because each of us is striving in some way to live with a more peaceful heart amidst the chaos of our daily lives. But there are times we need a warrior spirit. And when I trained in acrobatics, in trampoline and gymnastics, those are warrior arts, warrior sports. You know, in tennis and swimming, it takes great athletic ability, but you're probably not going to die in practice. Whereas in gymnastics or trampoline, a moment inattention, and it can be quite harmful. So there are certain arts, extremes, free solo climbing, that sort of thing, that are warrior arts. So I resonated from the warrior idea, the samurai and so on, Bushido, since I was young. But I added the idea of peaceful warrior because it brings a balance to our lives. It's not just about being warriors.
So you've got these ideas about how the body ages. And I think you're 74 years young.
Yes.
And I've seen some clips of you on YouTube. You're in phenomenal shape, as you should be. But that's the point, is as you should be. What are your thoughts about how the body ages or longevity?
Well, of course, we know some of that maybe is very likely genetically linked, but we can optimize our genetic potential. Yeah, they say the best thing about, you know, living a long time is make sure you have long-lived parents. But we do know that we can trigger, we can turn on or off certain genes by our lifestyle. So we have wiggle room. And you know, sometimes people have come to me and said, Dan, I have an emotional problem to deal with or a spiritual problem to deal with. And whatever they bring, I usually ask three questions. The first is, are you getting regular, moderate exercise? Notice I didn't say slow motion, CrossFit, high intensity, interval training, all the sophisticated approaches to exercise. I just said or asked, are you getting regular moderate exercise for your body, for your temperament? You see, a fundamental aspect of this approach to living, a set of life skills, if you will, that I teach, that I call the Peaceful Warrior's Way, a fundamental tenet is that there is no best system of exercise. There is no best teacher, no best book, no best religion, no best path or diet. There's only the best for each of us at a given time of our lives. Life is an experiment. We have to find out what works for us. That's why I just say, are you getting regular, moderate exercise that works for you almost every day? The second thing is, are you eating a balanced diet? And again, a balanced diet, what is that? It varies person to person. We have human digestive systems in common, so there are certain generalizations we can make, but individuals have their unique approach to the foods they're sensitive to or not, that they like or don't. So it's about finding the right balanced diet for each individual. Now, I've eaten vegetarian type diet for probably over 50 years now, which may have something to do with my level of health at my age. It's one factor. But again, each of us has to find out our approach. I do believe, and I need to say this without sounding preachy or moralistic, that if human beings ate less meat, it would be better for the planet, not just probably for their health. So I'm not advocating any extremes. I'm not saying absolute vegan, fruitarian, anything like that. You have to find out what works for you by studying it, but also testing and experimenting. And the third area after exercise and diet, as is becoming more and more well-known today, is, are you getting over time enough rest? I believe in power naps. After our interview, I may go take a power nap myself. I get up early and it's great. I feel refreshed. It's like I divide a day into 2 days. But many of us don't have time necessarily to take even a brief nap, or we just don't like doing it. My wife doesn't. So we just want to get enough sleep. Now, how much is enough sleep? Again, we have to find out what works for us. If people are getting sleepy during the day, of course, some of that's food allergies if they get sleepy after a big meal. But in general, we can experiment and find out the amount, whether it's 6, 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours. It varies person to person, depending on our needs and other factors. So those three things, I think, optimize our genetic potential and help keep triggering the good genes and not triggering various other genes. So we're learning more about that all the time.
So I have an educational company where we remind people how they were designed to move. And in doing so, really, we help them remember how they moved when they were children.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And I've listened to some of your audio tracks, and you also advocated remembering how to move like a child as well.
Yep. Picasso, the artist, said it takes many years to become young, to be like a child again. And he used to say his painting, you know, he could paint very accurate portraits of oil if you wanted to, but after doing that, he could go off in his own direction and be more childlike in his approach. And I don't idealize children. I mean, we have children now, we have little grandchildren of our own. I don't idealize them. They're learning about life, but there is a certain innocence, especially posturally. If you look at very young children who are learning to sit up, they have such great posture.
Yes.
And it's natural. I did a lot of Alexander work. You probably know, Tim, about Alexander technique, Alexander work. And they often point to children, how they sit naturally. We get thrown out of our natural balance as children in gravity by various tensions and bad habits, hunching over at the computer or our smartphones. That's, you know that. And I'm sure your listeners are familiar with that too. So babies, their little bellies expand and contract. They belly breathe more using the diaphragm naturally, whereas once the mind imposes tension over the years on our bodies, we tend to breathe intermittently, shallowly. They even have a word for it, keyboard apnea, while people are texting, you know. So, yeah, breathing, we can say it's just natural, but for most of us, it's not natural anymore. We have to relearn natural, how to breathe like a pendulum throughout the day, smooth and even, depending on our activity level.
Awesome. So since you brought that up,
yeah,
what are the four S's?
Oh, sure. You know, the first book I ever had published, many people think it's Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And it was my first, you know, book, a narrative book. But three chapters in that original manuscript didn't fit. They were more about training, physical, psychophysical training. So I pulled them out, and they quickly expanded into another book, which was actually my first book published in 1979. It's had four titles. I think it's a Guinness Book of World Records, but the current title is called Body Mind Mastery. And in that book, I go into four words that describe the compendium of what we call physical talent, talent for sports. Now, people might say, well, what do you mean talent's inborn? And after my years in gymnastics and athletics and coaching at Stanford University and so on, after observing and experimenting and experiencing, and I came up with the notion, which has since been scientifically validated, but the idea that talent was about 20% innate. Certain body types lend themselves to certain kinds of sports, for example. But I believe that talent can be developed, about 80%. Now, if it can be developed, what do you have to do to become more talented at sport? For example, to learn faster, to learn easier, and to increase your potential. And that's how I would define talent. And I came up with four words that all happen to begin with the letter S. Strength, which is pretty intuitive. The better muscular control we have, the better we can move, and the more powerfully we can move, and quicker we can move, and so on. The second S is suppleness or flexibility. A proper range of motion, less injuries, more effective movement, and so on. And most people understand that too. The third S is stamina. And you know, you have to be able to train over time to improve in any sport. And the fourth S, maybe the most important, is sensitivity, which includes other words like coordination, rhythm, timing, balance, and reflex speed. And these are all forms of sensitivity. And most of us know how to train, you know, to get stronger or more flexible, even better stamina. But I created some exercises for the athletes at Stanford University under my tutelage. And instead of working on the skills of gymnastics the first year, we focused on these qualities of talent. So they became more coordinated, better balance, rhythm, timing, and so on. And after they worked that foundation, they became more talented athletes. They started learning faster and so on. And in fact, my theory did work out in practice. I started out with a team that was actually high school level. It was really rudimentary team when I arrived at Stanford, but I set high standards. And by the time that I moved on to a professorship at Oberlin College, by the time I left Stanford, it was one of the top three teams in the United States. And I trained the top US Olympian as well. So my theory did work out in practice. Working on that foundation of talent, then their learning curve got steeper and rose quicker. Rather than just doing the same old with limited talent, whereas they had lacked some strength or lacked flexibility or lacked certain other elements, and they're struggling to get better, but they have to go back and work on that foundation. That's a long answer, but I think it's probably, I hope it addressed your question.
No, it's great. And while you were talking, I realized that the way you describe sensitivity is the way I would describe what we call reflexive strength. Which is basically, it comes from activating the vestibular system, and it controls balance, coordination, rhythm, everything together. But when you have that foundation, skill acquisition does get so much easier. It takes a lot of the learning curve out of learning new movements and things.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, you know, people sometimes ask me to go off on a brief tangent. They say, isn't it hard getting an agent if you're a writer, Dan, a literary agent? And I go, oh no, getting an agent's really easy. How about getting an editor, having them buy your book for a publisher? Oh, that's easy too. They go, really? I go, yeah, the hard part is writing the kind of book that agents and editors want. Now, the reason I'm going off on that apparent tangent is it's a perfect analogy, because people say, but isn't it hard to become a good athlete? Well, no, that's easy. The hard part is developing the foundation so you can then make the progress in athletics. And you know, when I started gymnastics, parallel bars, rings, high bar, and all that, I'd already developed that proprioceptive sense, that kinesthetic ability on trampoline. I knew where I was in the air, flipping around, and I knew how to move, and my muscle groups were developed, and that kind of sensitivity, as you described it, Tim. So once I had that, it was much easier to pick up the skills on the different apparatus.
Do you mind if I circle back to Peaceful Warrior real quick?
No, please feel free.
What does it mean to have your head in the clouds, but your feet on the ground?
Well, I often, indicate that it's a good thing to have a peaceful heart, but also a warrior spirit. In the same way, we want our head in the clouds in terms of a connection to our higher aspirations, our highest ideals, even the transcendent. And if you're talking about spiritual training, to be able to relate to that unnameable, that numinous quality that calls people to religion and spiritual practice, that uplifting kind of sense. But I have friends, I know people who are kind of, light babies, new age light babies, who are all they're connected to is head in the clouds, but they're ungrounded in the realities and what we have to face in everyday life. That's the feet on the ground part. So this approach to living that I teach, it's not just disavowing Western high achievement and going, the answer is in the East, all about looking inside you and doing meditations and inner work. No, it's about the best of East and West. And that's another meaning of that head in the clouds, feet on the ground. So I hope that responds. In some
sense. That was
helpful. Daily life itself is a form of spiritual weight training. If you don't lift any weights, you don't get any stronger. And so by tackling the challenges, by rolling up our sleeves and tackling the challenges we face in relationships, finances, career decisions, the challenges everyday life throws at us, that is really the essence of our spiritual training. It's not elsewhere in an ashram somewhere. It's right here, right now.
Is that where I've heard you speak about the law of acceptance. Is that where that comes into play?
It does. And it's a very good question. I actually appreciate your questions very much. There are certain laws. You know, when I was young, I was pretty disoriented. Daniel Boone, the pioneer, once said, I was never lost, but I was bewildered once for 2 days. And that pretty much describes my childhood. Ignorance is bliss, I was ecstatic. In other words, I was trying to find some wisdom in life. And I started collecting quotations. It's been a lifelong hobby of mine. And so I was, one of the first quotations I came across as a preteen was, a penny saved is a penny earned. And that made sense, Ben Franklin. Yeah, you save money and that's like earning it. But then I came across a quote that seemed to contradict it. Was nothing ventured or risked, nothing gained. So I was going, well, what should I do? Save, be prudent, or take risks? And then of course, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Oh, but you're never too old to learn. And absence makes the heart grow fonder, but out of sight, out of mind. All these quotations seem to contradict one another. And so then I came across a quote that I couldn't find its contradiction. It was something we've all heard. A chain breaks at its weakest link. And it's like, oh yeah, but no, there was no but. Every time you snap a chain, it's going to break where? At its weakest link. The interesting thing is it's not just about chains. That's good to know if you're in the hardware business, but it actually applies to everything. Everything in the known universe breaks at its weakest link. I know because I checked. So that was the first time I came across what I would call a spiritual law or universal law. It applies across every domain and it's consistent. You can count on it. So what's been called the first spiritual law, maybe the prime spiritual law, is the law of acceptance. So all that was preamble to answering your question, but I gave it some context. And the law of acceptance, or the law of surrender, it's another word for it, is not about giving up, except giving up in the highest sense, you know, kind of thy will be done. But what it's about is surrendering to the moment, to what arises, rather than resisting it or being in denial. We're all familiar with that today, denial. So it's actually the most intelligent, active, responsive approach to any moment, applying the law of acceptance. For example, instead of saying, oh, I wish I hadn't lost my job, it's okay, I lost my job. What do I do now? That's how you apply it. Or let's say you've been looking forward to a favorite dessert for weeks. You finally go to your favorite eatery and you eat your meal, but you're really looking forward to this favorite dessert. You haven't had it in a long time. And you say, I'd like this, please, off the menu, you know, my dessert. And they say, oh, we're sorry, we just ran out. See that person at the table next to you? They're enjoying the last slice. Now, I can go into the usual response. Wait a minute. You have it on your menu. I came here. I came a long ways. I've been waiting for this. Blah, 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 blah. You know, resistance. Or they just said we ran out. So it's like, oh, I have a chance to try something new. That's how you apply the law of acceptance in everyday life. And in the martial arts, we know you don't want to fight strength with strength. Somebody attacks you, you want to use their force. Step out of the way, step offline, move and use their force to respond to the moment. So that is the law of acceptance. Don't resist or fight or struggle with life, but accept what is and move with that. And that's, I probably could have just given you a bumper sticker slogan in response and taken less time, but I think this gives a deeper understanding, I hope.
I actually like the way you did it. So thank you very much for that. Because it also, I guess it's going to lead me to my next question. I heard you say, and I think I understood this correctly, and if I didn't, please let me know, that sure. One of the greatest practical spiritual practices we could engage in would be to ask, am I as relaxed as possible?
Oh, yes.
At least that's the way I understood it. No, which to me was it was doable. It's practical. Like, I can wrap my head around that. And like, you can apply that to almost any life situation to help you accept it, I think, is am I as relaxed as possible?
Exactly, Tim. I mean, that's, you've picked up on some key elements. I gave a talk at a university once, and a young man came up to me afterward. I was signing books, and he said, I know you do individual consultations with people occasionally, Dan. I don't advertise this, but occasionally I do. And he said, but, you know, what can you, he said, I'm a poor college student. What can you tell me for a dollar? And I told him six words that could change his life. It's a lifetime practice. And those six words were, here and now, breathe and relax. So you see how I've circled around to your question. Breathe and relax. So I'm not going to try to cover all those things now. It's a whole, I could do a week-long training just on those six words. But the relaxation part, let me tell you another story.
Okay.
There was a man who was searching for more energy. He felt he just lacked energy. And he tried all the magical powders from the lake in the Andes and, you know, the green stuff and energy healers and many, many different approaches. But one day he climbed a sacred mountain. He sensed that at the top he would find the answer to how to have more energy. And so he reached up to the sky and he, with all sincerity, he said, please give me, I'm ready, I'm open. Give me energy and spirit. Well, his question was so sincere that the skies opened, the clouds parted, and a voice thundered down from the heavens, or maybe in his own mind. And it said, I'm always filling you with energy, you know, but you keep leaking. And the two primary energy leaks, which describe the human condition, are unnecessary tension and inhibited breathing. And we already talked about that briefly, the inhibited breathing, where we often, you know, you take a selfie, you're holding your breath, that sort of thing. We do that unconsciously a lot. But the relaxation part is that there was one study that showed people lift a forkful of food to their mouth with as much tension as lifting like a 5-pound weight. We use unnecessary tension. So it's a good mindfulness habit just to notice during the day, even now in this moment as I speak about it, I'm shaking, you know, a little bit. Okay, let's see. Here and now, breathe and relax. I'm asking, reminding myself to take a breath and to relax the body. And this is under, as you said, Tim, this is under our conscious control. So many things aren't under our control. We try to fix our mind, have the right thoughts, positive thinking. We try to have the right emotions so we can live well. Those things are not under our conscious control. Emotions happen to us. Thoughts happen to us. They just appear in our field of awareness. But trying to control them, I think, is not realistic. But we can control our behavior, our body. Anybody who can tense their muscles can also relax them. So that's why it is one key to life in terms of, and as I wrote in that one book, Body Mind Mastery, the master key is relaxation because it enhances every element of talent. When you're more relaxed, you have better flexibility. When you're more relaxed, you have better stamina. When you're more relaxed, you're more coordinated. You're more sensitive. And there, you know, in some of my trainings, we take people through exercises so they can see how this is true. And you're even stronger when you're more relaxed because you're not opposing with antagonistic muscle groups. If you're tense, you're tensing your biceps and your triceps. So you're effectively weaker. So by being relaxed and using only the muscles you need, you move much more effectively with better stamina and so on. So that was my long answer.
So if everyone could accept their situation, their circumstances, and be as relaxed as possible, yep, it could open up, it'd change your life, open up the world to them.
Basically. It works when you're being attacked in the martial arts, and it works in every aspect of life. Where wouldn't it work? Just to stay relaxed. One's house is on fire. You don't have to have a calm mind. That may not be appropriate in that moment. You might want an alert mind, a flexible mind, but a relaxed body can move better rather than tensing up. And even in martial arts, just when we want to tense because we're being attacked by multiple opponents, that is the time to relax, relax and move, relax and move. And it's true for any moment in life, sure. How we do anything is how we do everything. So by practicing relaxation in a sport, in movement, walking down the street, it becomes easier to apply it in every part of life.
Awesome. Dan, thank you so much for sharing your time with me. This has been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed it. And you evoked my best because you asked some very good questions, and I appreciate you and your work.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. If you would like to know more about Dan Millman, check out his website, peacefulwarrior.com. Buy his book, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. You know, he's got 18 books. Buy any of his books. Rent the movie, The Peaceful Warrior. Great movie. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Please check out Dan Millman. You won't be disappointed. Have a great week.